welcome to another episode of Superheroes and Sci-Fi Musings with Adam and Ryan. As always, I'm your host, Adam, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Ryan. Ryan, how's it going?
It's going good. It's going good. You know, it's a nice, cold, snowy. Ah, crap, there's snow on the ground. Oh, we've been spoiled with warmish weather, and by warm, I mean like 40s and 50s.
Yeah, I'm not about the same here. you know, as Game of Thrones has told us for 7 years, winter is coming. It's now here. So there we go. And if I remember correctly, Game of Thrones starts in April. For those of you,
I've only seen season one. So
yeah,
I have access to HBO. So I.
So yeah, you can catch up at any time.
Uh-huh.
Cool. We'll add that to your watch list of the many things. But listen, before you catch up on Game of Thrones, Buffy is where we're starting.
Oh, God.
I'm not going to let go of that. That's happening. One way or the other.
I bet you're going to want me to start buying the comic book, too.
You're damn right, yeah. We already talked about that off air, mister.
I got 30%
off from getting in the mail. But we've got another good week of TV to discuss. But before that, let's do what we always do, or what I've been doing for the last 2 weeks, and where you've been saying next week I'll have something. Let's do comic book recommendations. I'm assuming you have one this week, you know, right?
I finally I'm on track.
Okay, I'll let you start.
Well, my comic book recommendation, it's this little indie title that my one really good friend who I do a podcast with, he and his buddy did together.
Oh, sounds amazing.
Sir, it is called Two Time Traveling Geeks.
Yeah, I know the guys that wrote that. One of them's a jackass who also shares my name. And the other one's a really good guy. So, yeah.
Well, really good guy who is fan-freaking-tastic on artwork.
Well, he didn't draw the art. It's actually, he co-wrote it with me, so I can't take all the credit or all the blame, whichever side of the fence you land. But my friend, Dave and I are the writers, and Federico Guillen, I think is how you pronounce it. I hope I'm not butchering that. Did the art, and yeah, I can praise the art. It is
gorgeous. I love it.
So you enjoyed the story?
I did very much. I probably was going WTF a couple of times, and just like this is just so you, Adam.
Yeah.
This is just
it's an extension of our preamble conversations, but in comic book.
It is.
And over exaggerated.
It does, though. It does make me want to go to the one multiverse universe where Christopher Nolan did a Thor trilogy, because I think that would be awesome.
Right, yeah. I mean, that was those would be three Thor movies worth watching.
And at least that universe had the Tim Burton Superman Lives movie get released.
Yeah. Let's see how you do. Give the listener, because if I do it, it's self-serving. But give the listeners a brief summary of what the
book is. All right. Briefly, it is about these two friends who are, you know, big into comic books, but, you know, more so, you know, the DC side of things. And Adam here comes across some weird magical copy of World's Finest.
Yes.
I believe that.
Number one.
World's Finest number one. That is super duper magical, and it transports him back into the mid to late 90s, where he finds himself kind of sort of possessing the body of the CEO of Warner Brothers at the time.
Who we made a fictional person, by the way, not to get to it.
Oh, so that's not the real person?
No.
Okay. Yeah. Because I thought Kevin Goldstein. Because I was like, wow, that actually does.
I mean, there might there may be somebody named Kevin Goldstein, but then there was now was not the president of Warner Bros.
And anyway, you know, and you know, before this the time traveling shenanigans begin, Adam kind of goes on a wee bit of a tirade against the Joel Schumacher Batman movies. And he, you know, takes this opportunity of accidental time travel to, I won't say how, but try to stop those. Well, Batman Forever already took place, but he tries
to stop.
He takes an interesting option when it comes to trying to stop Batman and Robin from being made.
Yes,
but indeed. When he gets transported back to the present, he realizes that DC Comics no longer exists. That instead of a Dark Knight trilogy, Christopher Nolan made a God of Thunder trilogy. And
yeah. I screwed up God, the timeline.
And I really want issue two, because I just need to see.
Well,
I need to see not just how this ends, but how the hell you rectify this with Schumacher.
Yeah, it's in the works. We're in writing process, and so so it's happening. I could give you spoilers, but. Dave may shoot me if I did that. So
no, even with the privilege I have, I don't want to know spoilers. I want to be.
I'll refrain from spoilers, and partly because we're still figuring exactly. You know, we're still writing it, so things aren't set in stone. Our mind may change, or we may go in a different direction. But yeah, it's cool to be back in the swing of things now that we've gotten them all shipped out and all that's taken care of. We're really getting to the nitty gritty of issue two, and then we'll see. We have ideas for further tales beyond that, but we may do larger issues if we are lucky enough to get the support that we got in issue one for issue two, and we're lucky enough to do three and four and beyond.
You already know that you got my support, so.
Thank you, and we appreciate it. And if we get more of the same, what we may do for three and four is do like a more of a either a graphic novel or a giant size, where it's like because the way the arcs are constructed is we're gonna have basically two issues where we go in the past and something happens, you know, and so we have to wrap it up in two issues. So it'd be two issue arcs each story. So we for three and four, we may do the whole two issues in one larger book so that everybody has the full story.
The complete story, yeah.
Right then and there. So, but again, this was our first go at it, so it was a learning process. But it was fun, and so
Now you're making me wish I knew an artist, because I want to tell comic book stories.
Well, I could always put you in contact with ours.
Don't give me that power, because I will abuse that power. Because I got stories I want to tell. I want to be my dream job is writing comics. So
well look, and that's ultimately I said. Well, you know, me and the whole book came about of just me and Dave sitting around, essentially shooting the shit, saying, what would we do if we could time travel? And so, you know, but then I started thinking. We both started thinking. You know, we read enough of these comics. Let's see if we can write one ourselves. And I'm happy to say that we've done it. I'm writing a set. We've teamed up on this one, and we're each individually writing our own stories. They're more; those solo stories are more, you know, straight up. Our takes on superheroes, our own superhero creations. So those are in the offings too. So yeah, it's really become something from, well, let's just try it to now something that I want to keep doing. So in addition to Time Traveling Geeks number two, there will be, for me, Eternal Vix number one in the pipeline. That's my superhero name. Not my superhero, but the superhero I'm creating name. And it's funny because I thought it would be too pompous to put myself as a superhero in my own book. So I went with somebody else. I'm in the book, but I'm not a superhero. I'm the male damsel in distress, if you will, in that story. So we got that coming, and Dave is working on his solo book is something called Dead for Seven, I'll expand on those on this podcast when they are closer to becoming a reality, and I'll give some more details on those particular ones. But for what you're concerned about right now, Two Time Traveling Geeks number two is officially in the works. So you'll have an issue. You'll have a resolution to that story. And I want to thank everybody that was generous to support us and contribute to the cause. And I really appreciate it. And I hope you'll all enjoy the ride and come back for issue two. But that's enough about that. Thank you for recommending it.
Of course. It was also kind of cool to have my name in a comic book.
Yeah. And yeah, the cool thing is everybody who contributed got their name in the at the back of the book on a thank you page. And then there were other perks of depending on what tier you supported. And so the more elaborate perks are being tended to now as well. So while we start plotting issue two, we are taking care of those for anybody who's wondering. But again, thanks everybody who supported, and we can't wait till you have issue two to read. Mm-hmm. But in terms of reading, I did some myself. There was a new Dynamite title recently released. It was called Peter Cannon Thunderbolt. And I kept seeing a lot of positive buzz on it online, saying, you know, this is the pick of the week when it came out and you should read it. And several people tweeted that. And I'm always open to trying new things. So I said, what the hell, I'll pick it up. And so I went over to Comixology and I bought it. For a superhero that I had no idea existed, and apparently he's existed before, it's not just, you know, it's not a new creation. But I read it, and it's very much, he's the smartest man on earth, you're thrust into his world where, you know, he's worked with a team of superheroes before, and they're in the midst of an alien invasion, the cool thing with that story, without giving too much away, is there are a lot of similarities to Watchmen. And the story blew me away. The art was fantastic. And this is such a story that the more I tell you, the more I'm going to give away. And I don't want to spoil it for readers. So all I'll say is, if you like Watchmen, if you're intrigued by the character of Ozymandias, you should probably consider picking up Peter Cannon Thunderbolt number one from Dynamite. That's my recommendation. Let's get into news, shall we?
Okay, let's do it.
All right, what's first on our agenda? It's something that you're quite upset about.
Well, last week we had the fantastic news of a zombie movie being brought into production, or at least, you know, the ball was starting to roll a little bit.
Sure.
With Zack Snyder's Dawn of the Dead sequel, Army of the Dead. And unfortunately now, a week later, we have the unfortunate news of a highly anticipated zombie movie being canceled. You know, on Twitter, I might have made the joke that as much as I disliked Bumblebee, what they did to the Transformer franchise, you know, Paramount, I'm saying, talking about Paramount.
Sure.
What they did with the, you know, Bumblebee and the Transformer franchise, that's not what broke the straw. what broke the straw for me was Paramount pulling the plug on World War Z 2. Now, I don't know if you've ever seen the first one that came out in 2013.
I have not.
Well, it's an adaptation of the Max Brooks novel.
Okay.
World War Z, an oral history of the zombie war. Starring Brad Pitt, and it's notorious because it had one heck of a troubled production history, going over budget and over schedule, and almost like the entire third act having to be rewritten and reshot completely. Yet it still ended up being incredibly, you know, popular and successful, very well received. Made like between 600 and 700 million at the worldwide box office.
Yeah, I remember it being quite successful.
Yeah, like surprisingly so. Like, you may not think in today's age that 60 million on opening weekend is big anymore, but they were only estimating 30 million. So the fact that it made for its opening weekend, so the fact that it made twice as much as they were expecting, you know, so then, hey, you know, we got a hit on our hands. It's a really good movie. And there have been talks ever since of a World War Z 2. Would Brad Pitt come back? And, you know, as of, I think it was 2017, Brad Pitt was able to talk David Fincher, of all people, to come in and direct the sequel. Which I think that would have been very interesting.
Who did the first one?
Mark Foster, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. He wasn't going to come back, so they got David Fincher on board. And as of not even like a month ago, we had talks and rumors leak out that they were going to start filming World War Z 2 by like June or sometime this summer. So it kind of did come as a shock to a lot of people, myself included, when earlier this week Paramount just decided to completely pull the plug on it and just completely scrap it. So I'm mad. How about you?
Yeah, it's very weird that I don't think I've ever seen that. Where it was like days away from, I mean, a similar thing happened to Superman Lives.
Mm-hmm.
We
were real close.
Yeah.
Real close.
Oh, well, it was days away from shooting. Make no mistake.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and just like Justice League Mortal, actors were flying down to Australia to start shooting, and they got
canned. Yeah. Oh, that's another one. So I have seen it before. Mm-hmm. I just kind of blocked it out.
It's so traumatic that we lost a Justice League movie.
So yeah, but it's weird that it would happen to this franchise, because you'd think that with the success that you've mentioned that they had,
mm-hmm.
and with a guy of the caliber of Fincher, that it would be full steam ahead.
Mm-hmm.
No doubt about it. But apparently, did they give a reason? Was there a reason? Do you know?
The only thing that I'm hearing, reason wise, was the fact that, because the first film came out in 2013, so it's been quite a while. Trying to look at it.
I think, but you'd think they would have got. I mean, they would have learned the lessons from the production troubles, and off they went. But I guess not. It's unfortunate. I've never watched the film, but I know there are fans of it, and I hate to see any fans be so looking forward to a movie, and it doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
at all. So,
yeah.
So that's disappointing.
The two biggest reasons, at least from reports that I've read, Paramount was iffy on the budget. I don't know off the top of my head exactly what the budget was. I think they were worried about having a repeat of the previous production, which...
Well, you can...
Yeah. And
you can justify that. You can understand their justification. I mean,
just worried about, you know, having it going, reshooting, you know. There should be... I would love if someone did a documentary on just the troubled production of World War Z. I think that'd be...
Oh, it'd be fascinating.
Interesting. I don't know what... Yeah. I just know that what the third act of that movie as we see it. And I think it's good. I think it's really good. But to just know that that's not even remotely close to what was originally planned.
My question is, did they CGI a mustache off of Brad Pitt?
No, they did not, but he did have really weird, like, shoulder-length hair in that movie. I'm not entirely sure why they went with that route. But
Maybe his hair was CGI. it's unfortunate, and... And that's too bad. You never want to hear about something like that. While the franchise was not something that was on my radar, I know it was on yours and many others. So I'm sad to see it go.
So at least we have Army of the Dead to look forward to.
Right, and I'm sure that'll be awesome. And that's one I will be watching because of being a fan, contrary to what many people believe. Of Zack Snyder,
we actually love Zack Snyder.
So
we're just a little bit more rational about it. That's all.
Yeah, and if we're the rational ones, there's a problem. But why don't we talk about two movies that are happening?
Yes, please. Let's talk about them. Unless they pull the plug like a month away from.
Oh, that would be terrible. Can you imagine?
Oh, that would destroy the internet.
No, I don't even want to think about So the Super Bowl happened a little while back.
The most boring Super Bowl in a long time.
Well, let's be honest, nobody really cares about the game.
All I care about is I root for anyone who's not the Patriots.
Yeah, but say what you want about the Patriots. Tom Brady is winning. You know why?
Because he cheats.
Well, that could be true. At the end of the night, he goes home to Gisele Bündchen. And as far as I'm concerned...
I don't care he cheats.
You don't care, but I care. Because I can't fault him for that. Okay. All I can say is, mad props to you, sir. You're lucky she's never done anything Marvel or DC related, or sci-fi. Because had she'd be one of my multiverse wives. And then you'd be losing. But... she's not, so good for him. But no, the big deal about the Super Bowl
are the commercials and the movie trailers.
Yes, and two movie trailers we got were one, Captain Marvel, which releases, less than a month? March 7th?
That's close.
I think that's what they said on the trailer, March 7th. Avengers Endgame, which is April 26th or 27th, one of the two. So, what I want to get, Ryan, is what are your thoughts on Captain Marvel in general, and then what you saw from what you've seen from not only the TV, the Super Bowl spot, but trailers in general?
March 8th. March 8th is Captain Marvel.
What did I say, 7th?
So you're like a day off. It's fine.
Oh, oh screw it. Put it up to the 7th summary.
Yes, please. I don't want to wait another day. I mean, I'm not a big Marvel Comics reader. I know quite a bit about a lot of characters, but I do have some blind spots. One of those was Carol Danvers, who for a long time went by the moniker of Miss Marvel. because the Captain Marvel moniker was used by a Kree warrior by the name of Mar-Vell, who everyone thought was who Jude Law was playing, and apparently that's wrong. Apparently he's playing someone else entirely. But I know a little bit about her. I know that, you know, she is one of the most powerful characters in the Marvel Universe, both comics-wise and, you know, we've, you know, heard the descriptions from Feige that when it comes to the MCU proper, she is going to be the most powerful character.
Yeah.
Even though she was, I would say, alongside Black Panther and Doctor Strange, she was kind of one of my Marvel blind spots. I'm still looking forward to it. Because I still think, you know, it's really cool that, you know, it's a movie set in the 90s. It's pretty much acting like a second prequel to the whole MCU with, you know, Captain America, the First Avenger,
yeah,
kind of being, you know, the prequel. This is kind of like a prequel part two. It's going to be real interesting to see a young, you know, Sam Jackson, Nick Fury. To have Coulson come back, finally, cinematically, that's something everyone's been, well, at least I've been wanting since Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. started up again.
Yeah, and Clark Gregg is great.
He is. And I think there's a lot of interesting storytelling possibilities with bringing in the Skrulls.
Yeah.
Because then that sets up the Secret Invasion storyline.
Yeah, the Secret War, Secret Invasion.
Yeah, which I think would be like how some people looked at when there were talks of the Flash movie being Flashpoint and the Warner Brothers using that, the Flashpoint movie, to explain away differences in casting between, you know, actors.
Yeah. I see where you're going with this. Yeah.
There's a way, at least I think, and I've seen some people share the sentiment, that there's a way.
Have you read Secret Invasion?
I never read it, but I know. Yeah, I know kind of what happens. I know pretty much what, you know, the storyline of it is, even though I've never read it directly myself. There are ways that they can use a Secret Invasion plotted movie to explain away, you know, if they want to recast Steve Rogers or Tony Stark or however they want to do it.
Yeah.
So.
No, for me, I'm actually really excited about Captain Marvel.
I am too. There has been a lot of complaint from certain sects of fandoms online. That's about as specific as I'm going to get. I get maybe the trailers just aren't doing much for you. I get that. I do. I disagree. But I get that. But there does seem to be a certain group of people who are just hating on this movie. Just A, because it's Marvel. And there are people that just hate on Marvel just without reason. And B, people who are pissed off that it's a female-led movie.
Right. Yeah.
And it may not be as widespread a hate as the 2016 Ghostbusters that I'm seeing, but I am seeing it, and it does kind of disgust me. People attacking Brie Larson and her personality, and, you know, people judging her acting in this movie based off of trailer. I don't see a problem with her acting at all.
Well,
but,
okay. In terms of acting, is she not an Academy Award winner?
I know she was nominated.
At the bare minimum,
I know she's been nominated.
Right there, she trumps everybody criticizing her, because at least she's done some acting where most of these people haven't.
Mm-hmm.
So that's number one. Number two, in terms of the story. Like, she's possessed by see, I don't know how the movie it. If she's part Kree, or she's just bringing
I think where they're going with this, because in the original comics, she was completely human, but she came into contact with this Kree device that kind of exploded.
I can kind of see
Captain Marvel being like a Green Lantern movie, kind of, sort of. But in the comics, you know, she came across this Kree device, it exploded. Somehow that gave her Kree superpowers of flight and the photon, like those energy rays that she shoots out. I don't know the time. But recently, and this is another example of Marvel doing retcons that I do not think are, Marvel just needs to stop. They were able to explain how, like, why a human got these powers, and that's because, at least comics wise, she's a Kree human hybrid, I think.
Okay, wow.
While I think in the movie, what they're gonna do is not, maybe not that, but somehow she ends up getting Kree blood into her system, and that melding with
I heard there's some kind of like not 100% brainwashing the way we think about it, but she is influenced by the Kree.
Yeah, she does seem, because even in the first trailer, we get, you know, the first trailer that came out last August or September really made, you know, us think, like, is she actually a Kree with fake memories, human memories, or is she actually human that got, I don't want to say brainwashing either, but kind of, like you said, influenced.
The only point I'm trying to drive at with that is, it would explain why she doesn't smile that much. And I know that's a big issue. I don't know why that's a big issue.
Like, I don't know, because look at how many freaking posters of other characters and they don't smile, but apparently it offends people that Brie Larson isn't smiling in almost any promotional stuff for Captain Marvel, even though...
Yeah.
Have you ever thought of a poster? Even the sainted Christopher Reeve, you know, all the his promo stuff for the original Superman movie.
I don't recall seeing him smile like
Yeah.
I don't know, but to me,
a lot of complaints are just god awful ridiculous.
That's
I'm sorry.
A complaint. But to me, I've read the most recent Captain Marvel number one issue, because they
rewatched
the title, and I like what I saw.
Perfect timing. Yeah, perfect timing.
And if you're gonna get in on the right. So.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like they wiped away her continuity; it just continues from where they left off. It's just a new number one. So that they can sell more books.
Marvel likes to do that. It's almost like
every 2 years.
Yeah, new number one, which
it's terrible on my collection. I gotta be honest. I will confess, it's a good jumping on point. But from the trailer and even the Super Bowl spot, I do get a Green Lantern vibe from it. Like, she's a test fighter pilot. You know, I guess she's gonna be on the Kree planet, or she's somewhere in space.
And so
I gravitated towards that, because if it has any similarity to the Green Lantern, I'm gonna love that aspect of it. So to me, that's not a negative. And, you know, there's a scene in the trailer where she's in space, or she's not in space, but in flight up in the clouds, and she punches a rocket, for God's sakes. How does that not get anybody excited?
I just can't wait to see her zipping around and blowing up the Skrull shit. Yeah, because people just don't know how to have fun anymore.
And look, people are gonna get pissed off. But seeing her in those blue and red colors and flying in a nice blue sky with the wind with her.
And the
yellow sun shining brightly, you know what that reminded me of?
Superman.
Does it sound familiar to you?
Superman.
Right, thank you. And so anything that's going to bring me memories of that, has a buzz.
Mm-hmm.
I generally like, look, they're bringing, like you said, they're bringing in the Kree and the Skrulls. And mm-hmm. that's going to lead to the probably Secret Invasion.
Secret Invasion movie in a couple of years.
And I've read that story in the comics. And I loved it. So, but everything I'm seeing, I don't see an issue.
Mm-hmm. And
they've sort of explained away her seriousness, her lack of mm-hmm. smiling by saying
she's a soldier.
Yeah, it's they Kevin Feige has kind of compared it to like Terminator. And I'm like, mm-hmm. all right, with the brainwashing and stuff, I can see that. Makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And look, as a kid who grew up in the 90s, I love that it's taking place in the 90s.
Uh-huh. God, that's why I love that first trailer. Not only because...
And she falls into the blockbuster. Yeah.
In the block. Oh, my... Oh, I loved it.
The first thing I thought
that
it was...
Just brought, that kind, brought back memories. God, that brought thing, back memories.
The first thing I thought of. But yeah, the visuals look good.
Mm-hmm.
Brie Larson is an accomplished actress, and
yes,
you know. So,
I'm gonna do this very controversial opinion. I'm gonna say that's a very controversial opinion. Where I'm not gonna make final judgments until I see the freaking movie.
I know what a concept, eh?
Exactly, guys. But, when promotional stuff was coming out for Suicide Squad. I hated all the tattoos on Joker. But I was not going to make a final judgment on Jared Leto's performance until I actually saw the movie. And I ended up maybe not loving Leto, but really enjoying his interpretation of Joker. I still thought the tattoos were beyond stupid, but performance-wise, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And okay. I want to jump to the multiverse where Ben Affleck gets a Batman movie fighting Leto's Joker.
Well, I mean, in your dreams, that could always happen.
Mm-hmm.
But no, but you know, I'm going back to Captain Marvel. I think, like you mentioned, seeing a younger Samuel Jackson, mm-hmm. one who is not this, you know, cool, calm, collected, composed leader. Of S.H.I.E.L.D. but just an agent, you know, and seeing Coulson again.
And I read some there was some article interview with Jackson where he said that around the time of Captain Marvel, Nick Fury is like on the verge of bailing out of S.H.I.E.L.D. and giving up on it. But then, you know, Carol Danvers, you know, Captain Marvel shows up and that kind of reinvigorates his commitment to this organization. Even though it's, you know, compromised by Hydra, but he doesn't know that.
Right. No, but you know, again, so seeing a younger Samuel Jackson and the de-aging technology they use looks fantastic.
With all the de-aging that they've used in the Marvel movies, I think it looks great.
Yeah. Seeing like you mentioned Coulson, the Skrulls themselves look really good from the brief mm-hmm. shots that we've seen.
They look like Skrulls.
Yeah.
We're going to have Skrulls in the movie.
So I'm 100% ready to enjoy this.
Mm-hmm.
One last thing I'll say before we move on to Endgame. Anybody trying to start this ridiculous Captain Marvel versus Wonder Woman war? Don't be an idiot. Because
Gal Gadot and Brie Larson want to smack the crap out of you.
Well, I mean, I'm not even gonna go there, because I have. Not going to go there. But no. there was a, you know... excuse me, I'm choking.
Please don't die.
No, I'll try. Excuse me.
I can't do this podcast by myself.
I'll try. Well, you can do it. Look, I think that there was an interview with Brie Larson a while back. I think it was before she started filming or when they were filming. Where she said she went to a theater and watched Wonder Woman.
Mm-hmm.
And she started crying. She got so emotional on the movie. And then she loved it so much. And the female empowerment. So don't start trying to start this bullshit, you know, Wonder Woman versus Captain Marvel fan war. Don't fan the flames. That's not what this is about. And I think another female-led superhero movie is a good thing. It's great.
Yes.
And I hope it makes gangbusters. And look, you know what? If it makes more worldwide than Wonder Woman, so what? Then Wonder Woman 2 will come out and do better than that. Success breeds more success. So let's hope for the thing. I've seen people hoping it fails. Who wants that?
I get having preferences when it comes to, you know, these universes, these cinematic universes, comic book, whatever. I mean, hell, if I had to choose, you know, if I had gun to my head, I had to choose between one or the other, I probably would stick with the DC universe. But it is okay to like both.
Yeah.
You know, and we should be wanting each, you know, regardless of what company is making, we want these movies to succeed. Because, like, let's, Batman and Robin kind of almost killed the superhero genre, and had X-Men, Blade, and Spider-Man not been the successes that they were, the cinematic landscape as it is today and pop culture landscape would be incredibly different from what it is now.
Yeah. No, but I mean, yeah, look, my home, if you even want to call it that, I'll use the sports analogy because people seem to want to treat these things like sports teams, which I think is asinine. But yeah, my home team, the first thing I cheer for is DC when it comes to comics. But I can love a hockey team, my home team, but appreciate other good teams and enjoy what they're doing. And that's the same with Marvel. I read Marvel just as I do DC. So again, guys, we gotta get past. You could prefer one or the other. And look, if Captain Marvel's trailers aren't your thing, and you legitimately say that based on, hey, look, the trailer just didn't do anything for me, fine, you're entitled to that opinion. But to intentionally bash it because it's Marvel or because it's Disney or because, well, Wonder Woman can't have another female superhero competing against it, that's bullshit. And it needs to stop. And so I'm gonna head into the theater March 8th and be ready to hopefully enjoy what I see. Yeah. If ultimately I don't, then I'll say it. But my hope going in is that I love it.
Yeah. And I'm with you. Like, okay, the way I describe it is my home is DC.
Your summer home.
My vacation, my summer home, where I go, you know, camping for the weekend is Marvel. But my home is DC, but my vacations are Marvel. I am just as excited for Captain Marvel and Avengers as I am Shazam, the Joaquin Phoenix Joker movie, Birds of Prey, Wonder Woman 1984, Matt Reeves' Batman movie. Whenever we're going to get a Superman movie next, I am equally hyped for all of them because while I have preferences, while DC is my home, I want every single one of these movies to be successful.
Yeah. Yeah, same. Speaking of, what are your thoughts on Endgame and specifically the Super Bowl spot? That was
kind of... I kind of am hoping, and it's probably not going to happen, but I'm really hoping that Marvel, no more trailers.
Yeah, I can't see them doing that.
Because I think my two thoughts with the Super Bowl Endgame trailer. Seeing anything more, I want to go in as blind as possible when it comes to Endgame.
Yeah.
And also, did you read the articles or notice that in two shots of the trailer, there looks like there's an unusual empty space between characters at some point?
I read that, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm thinking that might be Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
Maybe. That's just my personal guess.
Yeah.
Or either Drax really has mastered standing so still that no one can see him. I need this movie now because
Yeah, I mean, and you know what was cool about that trailer? First of all, it was nice to see, not nice to see because they all vanished, but nice to see a smaller Avengers team. What was it, five or six people? It's kind of going back to the roots of the first Avengers movie.
Probably. Yeah. And I want to know if there actually is a story reason why all MCU-wise, all of the original Avengers are the ones who survived the snap. And also, I don't know if you noticed, but that like black and white with red highlights, is everyone who died.
That was brilliant, right?
Mm-hmm. I didn't even notice that until it went by so fast.
But you see the empty baseball field, the eerie quiet.
The empty baseball field, you know, Statue of Liberty. It's just and I don't know if you know the extended universe lore behind what happened in the MCU regarding this.
In terms of what, a comic book?
It wasn't a comic book. It was actually I want to say obscure because I never heard of it until last year when this article came out. But there was some, not prequel, but it's set in between the events of Infinity War and Endgame.
Okay.
Some novel that was a prose novel that was released that kind of explains, not from the Avengers' perspective, but kind of from just humanity's perspective.
Sure.
The snap that we know of it is in the universe is referred to as the decimation. Mm-hmm. And only the Avengers and the Kingdom of Wakanda know the truth.
Oh, wow.
The majority of the world has no idea about Thanos.
Well, he said that, right?
That he
said, I hope they remember you told Tony.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But does the Avengers, according to this novel, and we'll see if they actually kind of keep true to this in the movie itself, but the Avengers decided to keep what happened a secret from the world because they were just afraid that the truth would just be too disastrous to the survivors.
Yeah.
So it's like a really haunting thought that in the Marvels, in this bright and all jokey filled and smiles and bright and childish Marvel Cinematic Universe, that we are now at a point where the entire world in universe thinks that the rapture happened.
Yeah.
But this is a jokey universe. This is nothing but
I think that's a ridiculous misnomer.
Exactly. I think Infinity War and Endgame prove that.
What about Winter Soldier? That's another one.
Winter Soldier?
The Incredible Hulk was a prime example.
Uh-huh.
I mean, there are others. The first Iron Man, yes, he was quippy, but that's Tony Stark's nature.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of, there were scenes in Homecoming that I damn near broke down and cried over. I didn't, but I almost did. So this idea that it's all fun and games and
no, it's not. Because like I said, at this current point in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, what is left of the human race thinks the rapture happened.
Yeah.
Because they don't know the truth. They just turn around and see all their friends and loved ones turning to dust.
Yeah.
And they don't know why.
It's quite It's quite incredible. It's... And you know what the best part is? You said you don't want any more trailers. It's probably not going to happen. But
I hope not. I legit think that they could have made $1 billion on this movie without any trailer. Poster.
I'm sure there probably will be another trailer, whether you want.
And I'm probably going to end up watching it, even though I know I shouldn't.
But I will say this, though. They don't need to put in another trailer to sell this movie. I mean, this movie is going to blow the box office to smithereens.
Oh, yes.
But I honestly, and I will confess, seeing Rocket in that suit, in that, you know, that space, Pym suit or whatever the hell.
His more traditional comic.
Yeah, that was awesome. Like, how Marvel can make that a talking raccoon look that badass and work.
And also, if those promo pictures floating around of Cap are true, that it looks like his suit is still going to...
The team shot.
It looks like his suit is going to stay pretty much the same as it has been for a couple of the movies, but that it's going to get, like, the chainmail-like texture to it. Oh, so good.
Yeah, no, it's... It was great stuff, and I can't wait for this movie just to. And the cool thing is to see how they culminate the first 20 movies.
Mm-hmm.
But also because then after that it'll be cool to see, all right, where are they going next? That's just as exciting. So I can't wait. And my ticket's as good as bought.
Yep.
But with that said, let's move on to our usual TV talk, shall we?
Mm-hmm.
Start off with, as we usually tend to do, Project Blue Book. What is the...
Project Blue Book.
Okay. What is the case for this episode?
The case, as with pretty much every episode so far, is based off of the... real-life encounters that airmen in World War II, describe as Foo Fighters. And they were, sometimes orange, sometimes blue, little balls of light that, pilots, flying over Europe and allegedly sometimes, also in the Pacific Theater. Would report seeing these balls of light kind of flying around them, flying around their planes, flying off in the distance, like they were analyzing and watching and studying and all that. This particular episode of Blue Book has Hynek and Quinn following, according to this website, Hynek and Quinn follow a series of strange clues leading them to a secret group of people who not only claim to have witnessed the strange lights during combat known as the Foo Fighters, but they also claim to have a way to contact them.
Yeah, no. I like the fact that they went back to, the seeing the lights, right? Because that kind of echoes the first episode and the pilot that we saw in the first episode.
Yep.
So I like that there's always been this. What are we? Five episodes in? Four episodes in?
We are five episodes in.
The case is all like sort of. They're different, but they all have a through line.
Mm-hmm.
And I think seeing the lights in the sky is the through line, right? And so.
Yep.
Even though each case is not so strictly connected, but they are, in a way they are.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoy that aspect of it. So when we see the group, the underground group, or the clandestine, I guess we call them, a group that believes they can communicate with aliens. Is the main guy, you know, the one that, spoiler, lights himself on fire?
Yeah.
Is that the pilot from the pilot episode?
I can't remember if he was.
Because I keep wanting to think it's the same guy. It looks like the same guy.
I still can't remember if it's the pilot or if it's the guy from the air traffic control tower.
Right, but it's one of those two, right?
I'm starting to believe more and more based off just like the way he talks and acts that he's the pilot of the plane.
Because man, they look almost identical. It's bugging me every week. I'm like, which one? I mean, I could easily look this up on IMDb, but
all it takes is a quick rewatch of the first. But you know,
I kind of like the mystery of it all.
Yeah.
But so. That was really, like, that group was really, what's the word I'm looking for? When I saw them, it was very eerie. When they came on screen and they started talking, and they were kind of cultish, if you will. They had a cultish sensibility to them. But then when Hynek, when Quinn and the group are all standing together and they see the lights too, so we're getting more and more instances of our two principal players directly seeing these quote-unquote alien occurrences and alien phenomena. And I like that. It's no longer a story being told to them. They're things that they're actually witnessing.
Mm-hmm.
And they also... So we get a kind of an explanation, though, of the transmission that they're hearing, right?
And what
was that explanation? What do you think of it? Like, where do you stand on? Who's behind that? Who do you think is behind that?
Who's behind the photos that they find at the provocative photo shoot?
Yes, because she says she was hired to just. Like turn on to play the message, right?
I'm still thinking it's got to be whoever was in the top, you know, not the top hat, but you know,
the man in black that we're not
the man in black that's been following Hynek around since the beginning of the show.
Yeah,
that's my best guess.
All right,
and I also I'm even more curious now because there is that strange like first episode, Hynek goes to that abandoned amusement park and he sees the film reel play that shows off the symbol of like the triangle with like the three lines sticking out. And we discover in this episode that that's not extraterrestrial in origin. Or maybe it is in a way, but it is a brainwashing technique that the government is using. And when Hynek shows the symbol to it's Fuller. The guy from when he shows it to Fuller, that's what causes him to stop talking and to run off and set himself on fire.
And I think you're right because the government is using it to shut people up, I guess, right?
It's somehow that symbol is related to brainwashing.
Yeah, so maybe it's Kree, like for Captain Marvel thing.
it all comes back.
It's all connected. That is a Marvel tagline, so it's all connected.
Hashtag it's all connected.
Yeah.
Except the Netflix stuff, but we don't talk about that.
Yeah, we don't have that. And it's all canceled anyway. That's their new hashtag. It's all canceled.
It's all connected and all canceled.
Yeah. Yes, the government's using it, but do you think the symbols themselves are extraterrestrial?
Could
it be something, and here, moreover, could it be something, could the symbols be something they got from the ship that they had?
That's what I'm saying, because it's hard to describe it. It's like, you know, a triangle, but coming out of the center of the triangle is three spokes with like little circles on the end of those spokes. That just seems really weird for people to come up with as a symbol, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So I am wondering if there maybe the General Damien Dark, saw that.
General
Dark.
We've got General Dark and Harley Quinn.
I'm sorry, but. maybe he saw that on like a craft or something, and I don't know. I'd like to think that we're going to get an explanation.
But I'm okay if this dream was long for a while.
Yeah.
That's the fun of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the scene with so the government gets interested in the Russian couple. After the events of last week, when she intervened.
And when Fuller broke into Hynek's house and confront. Yeah.
Yeah. So she saves Mimi with, threatening Fuller. And so now the government is questioning her, and they take specific interest in her husband, or quote unquote husband.
Mm-hmm.
We learned that her husband can be an abusive prick, which makes you
actually feel sympathy for Susie. I think her name's Susie.
Yeah, you do.
there was a part of me that was wondering how much of that is an act, or I don't know.
Yeah, like you never know. And that's the thing with these two characters, because
mm-hmm.
you never know what's a facade and what's legit. But especially her, she plays it so well that again, you fall into this false sense of security. That as a viewer, you start you feel sorry for, like you said, you feel sorry for her, but she's not only playing the character, she's not playing the other characters for a fool, not only playing mm-hmm. them for a fool, she's kind of playing us for a fool, and that's again a credit to that particular actress because she's great at it. But she even starts flirting with Quinn, right? And mm-hmm. she's starting to play him now. So their plot is thickening and getting deeper.
Mm-hmm.
That's just as intriguing as the... Like, the Russian subplot is just as intriguing as the extraterrestrial stuff. And I think that's the mark of a good show.
Mm-hmm. Because it really does make me question, what the hell is Susie up to?
So I'm kind of getting a vibe of X-Files meets Alias now.
Oh, I was going to say The Americans, even though I never watched that show, but everyone knows of it.
Isn't Keri Russell in that?
Yes, I don't know who plays her husband.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just concerned about Keri Russell. Yeah.
Wasn't she a one-time Wonder Woman?
She was, animated? The voice. Yeah, the voice of Wonder Woman.
Okay, yeah.
In the 2009 thing. Yeah, who cares about the guy? I mean, you might, but...
I'm looking up the guy.
Yeah. You do that. Yeah. I'll leave that to you. Maybe he'll end up on your multiverse list. Who knows? So another great episode.
Another fantastic end.
I'm just floored by this show. It just... Every week, it's engrossing. It's a little creepy.
Mm-hmm.
It's got all the good things that you want from sci-fi.
Yes.
With a little historical reality too.
Mm-hmm.
But we've come to that point in the show which you absolutely adore, and that's rating the episode. So
I hate you so much. I would probably give this a B+ or A-. It's on the fence for me. It's another fantastic episode. It's not a single episode of this show so far has let me down in any way. What I really enjoy out of it is that none of these are filler episodes. Where X-Files would have, episodes that are dedicated to, the lore of the show. And then they would just have a lot of episodes that were just generic Monster of the Week, had no, connection to the outside world, the outside lore, except for whatever they were investigating that week. And I like that, you know, to steal the Marvel tagline, everything is connected. It's all connected. And I just can't wait to see how it all plays out by season end.
It's another solid A for me. I'm really enjoying it. And I hope, like I said, the sooner that season two renewal comes, the happier I'll be.
Yeah. Come on, History Channel. Let's renew this.
I mean, aside from like, what else you guys got? Let's go.
Yeah.
So let's move on to Roswell, New Mexico.
Okay.
So what happened in that episode?
Okay. So, according to IMDb, because this is how we're going to do episode descriptions now, because I suck at doing it off the top of my head.
Ryan's tired of actually remembering the episode. No, I'm kidding.
Oh, my God. You know what? F you.
I'm kidding.
At least I'm not going scene by scene description as your past host. Ooh.
You can burn them all you want. It doesn't bother me. I'll chime right in there with you.
Max is conflicted when a town-wide power outage leaves patients at the hospital in need of help, a power outage that he caused at the end of last week's episode, while Liz learns more and more details about the night that her sister died. And we, the audience, learn even more details, like that whole last minute had me... I might have vocally shouted WTF, but actually said the words out loud.
Yeah.
When
specifically the decision that the three siblings make. Is that what you're talking about?
And the fact that Michael... Not that he's just taking the blame just to take the blame, but he says that he killed those girls. Just like, what the fuck?
No, okay, before we get there, because I have some thoughts, but I just loved seeing, you know, Max put aside his trepidation or
hesitance.
Yeah, to do more, you know, here, saving, if you will. For the sake of that, you know, he gets over that for the sake of saving that little boy.
Yeah.
Who needs surgery because he has heart issues, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, and he was minutes away when the hospital lost power. He was minutes away from dying. So, yeah.
And so it's partly Max's fault. So,
yeah, Max is responsible for all of Roswell losing power.
But then he goes in the basement and does that. I thought that was very, very good character progression moment happening. Mm-hmm. And I appreciated that.
I was going to say in this, and now he's starting to see where Isabel and Michael are coming from, because, you know, when he finds out that Kyle is also aware of the secret, at least about Max, not about Isabel and Michael, that's when Max says that, you know, I should never have trusted her. You know, I'm, you know, kind of finally now, four episodes in, you know, tells Mac, Michael and Isabel, you guys were right.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's conflictingness within Max because he wants to do the right thing, but he also sees that. But my brother and sister also have valid points and can be correct too, especially if Kyle were to slip up and open his mouth. However, what we find in this episode is Kyle gets rocked with some secrets of his own, does he not?
About his dad? Yep. Yeah.
So what's that about? And tell us what you thought.
Well, through a series of investigations, including Rosa, her high school ex, had stolen and held on to Rosa's backpack from school. And they find, Liz finds a note in the backpack along with a train ticket to, I think it was Los Alamos. Train or bus ticket, which, one of the two. And, Liz goes back and, kind of does her own handwriting analysis through the yearbook and is only able to find one match for who wrote the note, kind of like a love note. And it was Kyle's dad, former Sheriff Jim Valenti. Pretty much insinuating that Kyle's dad had an affair with a teenage girl.
Yeah. That's a little creepy.
Yeah.
And very Dawson's Creek-esque, kind of.
It's like, wow, this show is just becoming a soap opera.
But also, now we also learn that Rosa seemed to be very intimidated. And, scared is the right word, of Isabel. What do you think that's all about?
Like, what were your thoughts on this? Don't know. It's like I'm actually kind of wondering if Rosa knew any was let in on the secret at all.
Oh, from her affair with
with Sheriff Valenti and
maybe if she found out, she'd be fearful of.
Yeah, which like it's like I can I may not agree or share the sentiment, but I can understand why someone would if, they came across that information.
That makes sense, actually, yeah. I can buy that. We'll go with that for now until they give us an actual answer.
I'm still just, what the hell, Michael? What did you do?
Okay, so let's talk about that because... You're right. He does say that he killed Rosa and he was responsible for what happened. But the question I have is, do you actually think that he did it?
He says that he killed two of the two
girls.
Right,
right. But what I'm saying is maybe he's doing that because he knows that everybody else will.
I don't think he was responsible for as of right this second, the night we're recording, I don't think he's responsible for Rosa. But I think he had something to do with maybe the other two girls that were in the crowd. But I don't know. Yeah. It's just the way he's kind of wording it. He's like, almost as if he's saying, well, I killed two out of three people. I might as well, to protect you guys, I might as well take blame.
I took it as he's saying that because he knows the people have such low opinion of him as it is and they'll believe that, to which they'll get off the trail and not investigate, not find out about the fact that they're aliens. But I don't necessarily believe that he did it, is what I'm saying to you.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just my interpretation. Like, I think he's taking the blame for the sake of just deflecting suspicion and any more investigation.
But he admits to actually killing people, too.
Yeah, but did he but in the way he said it, can you 100 categorically say that you firmly believe that he killed those people?
I believe him.
Right. Fair enough.
And there's something about that they're not saying. This is the frustration of a weekly TV show. It's just give us the whole damn answer.
Yeah. It's this kind of speculation is fun. So.
Uh huh. And of course, this is just, this is going to break Alex's heart. And I don't know if I can ever forgive Michael for that. Because poor Alex has been through enough shit.
Very true. But no, it was, again, I thought it was another fantastic episode of this show. Mm-hmm. The mystery deepens. Like, even when you think you have answers, the mystery deepens.
I know. And actually, it is starting to make me reconsider the Nacedo theory. Part of me is still kind of certain / confident, whatever, that he's around somewhere, but at least when it comes to the night of Rosa's death, it's like breaking my heart to actually think of these, you know, Max, Michael, Isabel actually, you know, one, two, or all three of them actually being involved. Because that's just gonna F Liz up bad.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, like I said, this reboot is really becoming the template for how to reboot old shows.
Mm-hmm. I in theory, I don't have a problem if like a reboot, remake, whatever, treads similar ground, but it is refreshing when, you know, it's doing its own thing completely.
Yeah.
When it's like none of this stuff, none of it was in the original show.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it is really nice to see these characters that I'm familiar with. You know, I'm familiar and am a fan of a particular version of these characters, and to see this interpretation, I'm loving it.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. So with that in mind, what would you rate this episode?
I'd give it a solid A. You know, it's just, it's furthering the mystery. It's, you know, the conspiracy as to what happened that night. Still, you know, Michael's going to break Alex's heart, and that's just, it is kind of, I want to know how, I'm be very curious to see how long Liz and Kyle remain a thing.
Yeah. I don't think that'll last long.
Not that Kyle's a bad character, the kind of, you know.
But you can see when Max and Liz met in the diner.
Yeah.
There's still such a connection, and she admits to loving him. So I think that's the end game.
Well, it's all, you know, it's, if you know anything about the original books or the original show, it's all, we know it's going to end up Max and Liz. It's just the journey for us to get there.
Yeah, yeah. And when the journey is unique and and it keeps you on your toes.
Uh-huh.
That's the mark of a good mystery. And right now, Roswell's taking telling a good mystery. So mm-hmm. I'm going to echo your sentiments and give it a solid A as well. But that brings this episode to a close, my friend. So with that, let's do some social media plugging, shall we?
Okay.
Where can we find you online if we want to talk about this further, Ryan?
Well, if you want to follow me on Twitter and still accuse me of being a Zack Snyder hater and a MCU shill, you can follow me at The Amazing Rye Guy.
Awesome.
I'll only block you or mute you if you come off as a total prick, but I'm willing to engage in thoughtful, respectful, you know, back and forth. So.
Yeah. And if you want to talk with me about all this stuff, respectfully and insightfully, we can do that at Superhero Sci-Fi on Twitter. And then if Facebook is more your thing, then go to the Tales from the DC Multiverse Facebook page. Request entrance into the group. One of us will add you, and we'll continue the conversation there as well. But that does it for us. We hope you enjoyed the episode. We hope you have a wonderful weekend or a wonderful week, depending on when you're listening to this very show. And until next time, remember, everyone, live long
and prosper. And take care.